It was a deal the House of Saud could hardly refuse, given its geographic location, lack of military might, and general vulnerability to neighbors like Iran, Syria, Iraq, and Israel. Naturally, therefore, Washington used its advantage to impose one other critical condition, a condition that redefined the role of EHMs in the world, and served as a model we would later attempt to apply in other countries, most notably in Iraq. In retrospect, I sometimes find it difficult to understand how Saudi Arabia could have accepted this condition. Certainly, most of the rest of the Arab world, OPEC and other Islamic countries, were appalled when they discovered the terms of the deal and the manner in which the royal house capitulated to Washington's demands. The condition was that Saudi Arabia would use its petrodollars to purchase U.S. government securities. In turn, the interest earned by these securities would be spent by the U.S. Department of the Treasury in ways that enabled Saudi Arabia to emerge from a medieval society into the modern industrialized world. In other words, the interest, compounding on billions of dollars of the kingdom's oil income, would be used to pay U.S. companies to fulfill the vision I, and presumably some of my competitors, had come up with to convert Saudi Arabia into a modern industrial power. Our own U.S. Department of the Treasury would hire us at Saudi expense to build infrastructure projects and even entire cities throughout the Arabian Peninsula. Although the Saudis reserved the rights to provide input regarding the general nature of these projects, the reality was that an elite core of foreigners, mostly infidels in the eyes of Muslims, would determine the future appearance and economic makeup of the Arabian Peninsula, and this would occur in a kingdom founded on conservative Wahhabi principles and run according to those principles for several centuries. It seemed a huge leap of faith on their part, yet, under the circumstances, and due to the political and military pressures undoubtedly brought to bear by Washington, I suspected the Saud family felt they had few alternatives. From our perspective, the prospects for immense profits seemed limitless. It was a sweetheart deal with potential to set an amazing precedent. And to make the deal even sweeter, no one had to obtain congressional approval, a process loathed by corporations, particularly privately owned ones like Bechtel and Maine, which prefer not to open their books or share their secrets with anyone. Thomas W. Lipman, an adjunct scholar at the Middle East Institute and a former journalist, eloquently summarizes the salient points of this deal. The Saudis, rolling in cash, would deliver hundreds of millions of dollars to Treasury, which held on to the funds until they were needed to pay vendors or employees. This system assured that the Saudi money would be recycled back into the American economy. It also ensured that the commission's managers could undertake whatever projects they and the Saudis agreed were useful, without having to justify them to Congress.